The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Today, we'll talk about 10 things that most Disney World first-timers don't know. That's coming up on this, episode 28 of WDW Prep to Go. Hello and welcome to WDW Prep to Go, where we talk strategy and ideas for people planning their Disney World trips. I am your host, Shannon Albert, the creator of WDWPrepSchool.com. Welcome to this podcast. If you have listened to more than a couple of episodes, you may have been able to recite the intro right along with me because it's the exact same every single time. I actually have notes for every episode, and mostly it's bullet points of just things I want to cover because, you know, scripting it makes it sound a little bit robotic, but the intro is one thing that is verbatim written down, so it tends to be the same every single episode. So welcome to this episode. We are at episode 28. It has just flown by. I think it's been about 6 months since the podcast launched, and it is just a ton of fun, and I'm so happy to have done it. And it has really connected me to people in a whole new way. And I really like being able to get away from text once a week and sort of emote and explain, you know, my feelings on things. And I think that's easier to do in a podcast. So I'm glad to have you here. You can find me on the website at least once a week, most of the time, in addition to the podcast. And on social media, that includes Twitter and Pinterest and the Facebook page. The Facebook page is my personal favorite, and you can get there at facebook.com/WDW Prep School. And the Facebook page is actually where I asked recently for post ideas for topics. And I've done this before, but this time most people responded that they wanted information about Downtown Disney, which it was interesting for a couple of reasons. One is that I've never gotten that suggestion before. Two, most people said it. And three, I had never covered Downtown Disney. And so it was sort of a obvious, like, duh, this makes total sense. So that's what I will do. And so a couple of days ago, I did publish a post on Downtown Disney. What I didn't anticipate when I started writing that it would by far be the biggest post on the website. And I guess it's just because there's so many different things to talk about in Downtown Disney. There's restaurants and entertainment options and stores and, you know, just lots of things to talk about. So it ended up over 4,000 words, which is a lot. I had previously had something that was almost 3,000 words, and I thought that was a lot, but this one was even more. And so if you want to check out that page, I'll link it in the show notes. But everything you want to know about Downtown Disney, including the current construction that is taking place there and how it's transforming, and its name will be Disney Springs by 2016. So you can check that out in the show notes and or on the website itself in the main blog section. And so if you join the Facebook page, you can kind of chime in on some of those questions that I like to post there. As usual, I would like to remind you that if you're an iTunes user, I always appreciate people who take the time to leave ratings and reviews. I got this one from someone whose name is Mom of Two in Buffalo, and the subject is easy listen and great information. And she says, I am new to podcasting, but after trying to find a good Disney choice, I stumbled upon three random selections, one being WDW Prep to Go. I find Shannon easy to listen to. She has a pleasant tone and really down to earth. The information is always prepared ahead of time and organized logically. I'm a planner and I've been to Disney many times and have gone annually for at least 5 years with kids under five. Feeling like I had the hang of things, I still learned at least a few new tips in each podcast or have felt more confident in my choices after hearing Shannon's opinions. I've also found time-saving tips for the few things I have not done and might have tried. I'm very happy I found this podcast and prefer it to the two others I have compared it to. This will be my choice for all things Disney World. Thank you. So I appreciate that she took the time to write that. And if you would like to do the same thing, you can go through the app on your phone or computer, or you can go to wdwprepschool.com/iTunes, and it will take you right there as well. So as I mentioned in the first few seconds of the podcast, I'm going to talk about 10 things that most Disney World first-timers don't know. And when the site was new, I actually wrote a post that's been very popular on the same topic, but my list has changed over time a little bit because I'm in contact with so many people all the time that I have a different sense of what most first-timers don't know. And so I've sort of modified the list and created a new one today. And so I'm going to go over that today. And maybe you'll learn a few things, even if you're not a first-timer, like the reviewer today said, she always learned something new. So we'll see. Or if you're not a first-timer, maybe you will identify with this when you were a first-timer, because I can still remember being a first-timer and how surprising some of these things were. So let's go ahead and dive into the list. And don't forget that at the end of every episode, I also do have a quick tip of the day, so stay tuned for that as well. So here is the list of 10 things. Let's start with number one. Number one thing that people don't seem to understand is how big Disney World is. And I think I always find this to be like when someone's expecting their first baby, you can tell them how hard it's going to be, but they'll never really get it until the baby's there. And so this is sort of a similar concept. You don't know how big Disney World is until you get there. In terms of quantifying it, it is 40 square miles, and that equates to roughly the same size as San Francisco, or twice the size of Manhattan. So we're talking about a full-fledged city here. So the concept of going from place to place quickly is not realistic because things are really spread out. By comparison, if you happen to have been to Disneyland, it is 500 acres, Disneyland, the whole resort, and Disney World is 25,000. So if you happen to have been to Disneyland, that might give you some perspective about the difference in size. My sister-in-law, who is just as neurotic about planning Disney World stuff as I am and very qualified to give advice, her daughters do competitive cheerleading. And when their group was going to Disney World for a competitive cheerleading trip, she was trying to warn the people that were leading it that their plans weren't really going to work because they had, you know, go here, then go here, then go here. And she's like, you're not going to be able to do that in the time allowed because of how big Disney World is. And she was right. And unfortunately, there were some people that were late to some events. So number one is how big Disney World is. And number two is just sort of is related. But number two is how long the transportation takes. Now, due to the size of Disney World, the transportation can take a long time. And in addition, the Disney World transportation isn't predictable. Like if you went to a big city that had public transportation, you often can pull up an app. Like when we went to Chicago, we had an app when we were there that could show like where the buses were, when we could expect it, and like the trains are on a schedule, that kind of stuff. Disney World's not like that. So, you know, not only is it big, but you just can't really predict the transportation there. So my rule of thumb is always to allow an hour to get anywhere, particularly if you're using buses, because you don't know how long it's going to take for one to get to your bus stop, and you don't know how many stops it's going to make between you and your destination. So if it takes less than an hour, you'll be pleasantly surprised, but don't think it's going to be less than an hour and then be disappointed when it's more. So, you know, just really allow for plenty of time for the transportation. Number three is that there is no gum sold at Disney World, or in fact, at many places in Orlando, including the Orlando airport. And the reason for this is that it's messy to clean up. So it's just easier for Disney World to not sell it, to decrease the chances that it's going to get stuck to tables or the pavement or whatever it is, so they don't sell it. And Orlando is the same way. Orlando Airport, they have the same policy. So if you want gum, you should go ahead and bring it with you. And of course, don't stick it to the tables or the pavement or anything like that. So just make sure you add that to your packing list. Number four is that hidden Mickeys are everywhere. And this is something I sort of take for granted because I'm so used to the concept of hidden Mickeys. And then someone emailed me recently and said, what are hidden Mickeys? And I thought, okay, we need to explain this because if you've never been, you probably don't even know what that means. And hidden Mickeys, the concept is simple in that Mickey shapes are in everything throughout the Disney theme parks and cruises and, you know, anything Disney related. So for instance, the carpet pattern might have a random Mickey head in the pattern, or the architecture, the architectural details on the side of a building might have a Mickey shape in it, or the pavement, or, I mean, they can literally be anywhere. And so some people make a whole, like, point of this, like they go looking for specific hidden Mickeys. Our family just prefers to randomly catch them. Like if we're standing in line somewhere, we'll kind of just look around and see if we can spot some, but we don't go out looking for them. For people that want to be more intentional about this and look for them, there's a website called hiddenmickeyguy.com. And any websites I mentioned will, of course, be in the show notes. Hiddenmickeyguy.com is the website of Steve Barrett, who is the author of the Hidden Mickey books, which are for sale in the Disney theme parks and in bookstores. And so you can actually read about the hidden Mickeys and where they're located and go look for those if you would like. And that can kind of just be a fun, free way to entertain yourselves during your trip. Number five is that you can trade pins in Disney theme parks. And this is pins, P-I-N-S. And the way that this works is that you have typically you have a lanyard and pins. So you get started, like you would go on eBay or you would go online to the Disney store or something like that and get your own set of pins to start with. And then when you're there during your trip, you can go up to cast members and ask to trade pins. And as long as your pin is a Disney copyrighted pin, they will trade with you. The cast members will. You may also wish to trade with other guests, but that may, you know, require a bit more haggling. Cast members will do it gladly. And there's a lot of details to pin trading. And instead, since I don't know a lot of the details, I'm going to go ahead and just link in the show notes to a post by Tom Bricker. Tom Bricker is the person who runs DisneyTouristBlog.com. And I think he's probably best known for being a great photographer. And his photos are everywhere of the Disney theme parks, a lot of Disney theme parks. He's been to, I think, every one of them. But he also has a website with lots of great information. And so he's got lots of tips about, for instance, if the cast members are wearing a certain color lanyard, they'll only trade with children, and just, you know, lots of tips like that. And so I'm going to go ahead and link that in the show notes. So if you are interested in pin trading, then you can get to his post, which will explain more about how to go about that. Number six is that Disney has an app called My Disney Experience. And actually the website when you make an account online is My Disney Experience as well. And the app is just sort of a different way to connect to some of that same information. And Disney's has had apps for a long time, but My Disney Experience is a whole other level in that you kind of have to have it. I mean, if you don't have a smartphone, then obviously you don't. But if you do, there's a lot of good reasons that you would want to have it. So in the My Disney Experience app, you can check wait times for attractions. You can make dining reservations. You can make FastPass Plus reservations if you're staying on site. And, you know, there's lots of stuff you can do there. So I highly recommend downloading that before your trip. It's kind of fun to use the app when you're at home and look at wait times while you're just sitting in your pajamas, you know, in your house, because it's sort of fun to see, like, okay, the Magic Kingdom's been open for 2 hours and now that has a really long line, whereas an hour ago, it had almost no line. It's kind of just fun to sort of look at that. And so if you're kind of trying to think about your touring plans, you might want to check those wait times before your trip just to see how things are going at different times of day. I do that all the time. And, you know, the only sort of warning about that is that those times are set by Disney and sometimes they're not accurate. And so, you know, it's the best we have to go off of. And so, you know, we might as well use it. But the only caveat there is that they may not be correct. But it's interesting to look at home, and it's very, very useful during your trips. Number seven is that adults can ride rides even if the kids don't want to. Now, the concept of this is called rider switch, and I believe it's something I've talked about in past episodes of the podcast, but a lot of people don't realize that this is an option. So the way that it works is that if you have a ride that your child is not tall enough to ride or they're too scared to ride, and then you can trade off with another adult in your group and take turns riding. So let's say you have mom, dad, a 9-year-old, and a 4-year-old. The 9-year-old is really into riding everything. The 4-year-old is too short or too scared. So dad and oldest child can go ride the ride. And then when they get off, the mom and the oldest child can go ride the ride. So the people in the first group, if you're going to get fast passes ahead of time, you would only need to get fast pass reservations for the first group, like the dad and the 9-year-old in this case. And then when they go to ride the ride, they can ask for a rider switch pass. And you will need to have the whole family there together to do this. So because a lot of cast members will want to see the child that can't ride because, you know, they don't want you to be making stuff up. So the whole family goes, gets the rider switch pass. The two go on to ride. The other two can go and do other things. And I have ideas on the website actually for what to do to kill time nearby if you're the person waiting with the little kid. And then they get off and hand the rider switch ticket to the mom, and the mom can go with the older child, and up to 3 people can go in that second group. And so it's super convenient. It's great for older kids too, because you'll notice in this case, the 9-year-old got to go both times. So that's super convenient. It's a great way to maximize fast passes, but it does take more time, obviously, because you've got 2 different groups going on the same ride. So it's just something to keep in mind, but it's a great option for people that do want to ride, even though their little ones don't. Number 8. This one is something that I get emails about every single day. So I know a lot of people do not understand this. So number 8, you can book your trip before discounts are announced and still use the discounts. So discounts, I usually recommend people book their trips over 6 months in advance. And that's, a lot to do with just being able to make dining reservations 180 days in advance. And if you're staying on site, you do have a benefit. When you're making your dining reservations, you can make them for your whole trip if you are staying on site. So more than 6 months in advance, but the discounts are almost never out that far in advance. So you are booking it at full price, and then later you can apply the discounts. And so number 8 is that you can book it and then apply the discounts. It is possible. So, you know, free dining is the one that people talk about the most. So if you book it now, and right now we're in early 2014, and if free dining's announced for the fall, you can book it. And then if it's announced later, then you can call and have it applied to your account. And then your account will reflect the change, which is that your dining plan will be free. And so it'll decrease your balance. Or if you didn't previously have a dining plan, it'll add that option to your overall account, your reservation, for not any more money. So anyway, you can book it and get the discounts, but the only caution there is that they only allow so many rooms to use discounts. So you will need to be one of the first ones to call just to make sure that you are one of those people that is taking advantage of the promotion. I had somebody really upset last year saying, I called for free dining way after it was announced. I thought I could get it anytime. They told me there were no more rooms left. So you want to call right away, and you can. This is one reason to book with a Disney travel agent, is that they keep tabs on these things and they get it for you so that you don't have to stalk the current sales and figure out what's available. But a good one will do that for you. So that's another option as well. Number 9 is that 3 of the 4 parks usually open early. So a lot of people will tell me they don't understand why I suggest getting to the parks early, and they don't necessarily believe that the parks open early. So let's say the parks have a posted opening time of 9 a.m., which is pretty common. If you go to Magic Kingdom, it will open at 9 a.m. That one does not open early, but the others do. So the Hollywood Studios will open anywhere from 15 to 45 minutes early, depending on the time of year. And so I usually advise people arrive to Hollywood Studios at 8:15 to take advantage of that. Epcot and Animal Kingdom will often open just a little bit early. And let's go back to Hollywood Studios real quick. When they do open early, they allow you to ride Toy Story Mania, but nothing else. So it's a great opportunity to ride that ride and then go get lined up for whatever's next, which will usually open at 9 a.m. at the official park opening time. Now, Epcot and Animal Kingdom will often open about 10 minutes early. And the way that they do it can kind of vary. Like, they'll allow you to walk to a certain point and, you know, within the park, and then they'll let you go further at the official park opening, or sometimes they'll just open early and let you get started with your day. But no matter how you do it or how you think about this, going to the parks 30 to 45 minutes early is usually a good idea. Even at Magic Kingdom, which doesn't open early, you want to get lined up just so you can be towards the front of the line and start into the park, you know, at the beginning of the line going into the park. And then obviously you'd be at the beginning of the lines to start riding rides. So anyway, number 9 is that the parks open early. 3 of the 4 parks open early, but you should arrive to all of them 30 to 45 minutes early. Number 10 is that you will most likely suffer withdrawals. And, you know, people hear this and then they email me and tell me, oh my gosh, you were so right. This is really intense. And I think that this is, it's no different than planning any event. Like, if you're planning a wedding, there's lots of planning that goes into it. Then you have the event, and then what? It's just such a change in, like, you've been spending all this time and having all this anticipation for this thing, and now the thing is gone. And so I just recommend knowing that ahead of time and planning for what you're going to do to alleviate that. And so what I do usually is I try to think about what our next trip is going to be. And that gives me something else to sort of start thinking about and something to look forward to. There's some quote that said, one of the keys to happiness is having something to look forward to. And so if Disney World is the thing that you've been looking forward to, then you need to start thinking about what the next thing you're going to look forward to is. And, you know, if it may not be a trip for a couple of years out, but it's still something to look forward to and something to sort of anticipate and fill the space that Disney World previously did. So I hope that list of 10 was helpful to you. And maybe even if you're not a first timer, you learned a thing or two. I do have a quick tip of the day before we wrap it up here. And this quick tip of the day is about knowing when to book your flights. I think flights are the hardest thing to figure out right now. They just are so much more expensive than they used to be. And one of the hard parts is knowing, okay, that price looks a little high to me, but I don't know if I should book now and expect it to go up later, or if that price seems high to me, maybe it's going to go lower. I'm not sure. So one way to deal with this is that you can go to bing.com/travel and you can search for airfare there. And after you type in your cities, like I live near the Dallas airport, so I would do Dallas to Orlando, it will say you should wait to purchase, or it'll say buy now. Prices are probably going to go up. And it has just a history of airfare. And so it can tell you, like, the fares right now, where they fall in the average. And so that is just sort of a great way of knowing whether or not you should buy or wait. And it's something that I often use. Unfortunately, the averages have gone up. So whereas I really hope for a $200 flight, it's more likely I'm going to find tickets closer to $300 now. So, but bing.com/travel can help you to determine what is normal and what seems high. So that's a quick tip of the day. I think that will wrap up this episode of WDW Prep to Go. For more information, including all the links that I've mentioned and the list of 10 tips, you can visit wdwprepschool.com/episode28. That is the number 28. Until next time, I'll see you on the site.